They want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 470, recorded live on October 5th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burks, with
Taz427 and
Sabbath TS.
You can join our chat room and watch our live stream video, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via your voicemail line at 630-3031-VOICE. Also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Community Podcast. It is to become a contributing patron, simply click on our Patreon logo on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. That was brutal. Sorry about that, guys. Andy is under the weather with a migraine, so he is producing. But I've got the top bell today to host the show. Taz, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Had a great weekend this past weekend. Went to the Yellow County Geo Rally. On the way there, though, I grabbed my first FTF of the day. So the Puzzle Fight Club. I won the Puzzle Fight Club. The you first rule of Puzzle Fight Club is don't talk about Puzzle Fight.
Well, your face looks all right. So you obviously won. I mean, your face looks pretty good.
And I needed to make a mental note to self. From now on, use a stick to poke the fake dog poo because it wasn't fake.
Oh, you touch dog poo, dude?
Yeah, with my shoe. So, but you know, I told my wife about it. It's like, did you wash your hands? It's like I didn't touch it with my hands. So I made it to the Geo Rally after that, and joined up with my team, the Adventurers. We had a kick-ass time, 6 hours of geocaching awesomeness. We managed to grab two more FTFs as a team, and we did the. Got the four quadrants corners challenge, which is there's a specific cache hidden in each of the four quadrants of the county, and you don't know which ones they are, but they have a special tags in them, and if you get the four corners, you get another 45 points, and managed to do, as a team, seven icons that day. As an individual, I got an eighth icon because one of the photo ops that we did happened to be at a virtual, so I went ahead and claimed that virtual.
Nice.
And our team came in fifth out of 37 competing teams, so not quite up to the Joshua standards, but not too bad either.
Now, was your team broken down by age, or was it just like teams?
It just teams.
So you're competing against like 20-year-olds? Really?
There are some teams in there that were, you know, some pretty young ones. Actually, one of them we rolled up on. They were getting a hanger out of a tree. Actually, they were putting a hanger back up in a tree, and they were hurrying. They were standing on top of each other's shoulders to put the thing back up, and they were hurrying and you know, they did a little cheer because they got it up there before we got out of the, or as we're getting out of the vehicle. And I just grabbed one of my tools of the trade and got out there to the cache.
What's the old man? Pink.
It's like before they left, before they could get in their car and leave, we literally had it down. So I was like, yeah, that's how experience does it.
Right? Yeah. I actually last night I got my 93rd month with an FTF. I got it last night.
Congratulations.
So I am seven more months away, and I've hit 100 months in a row.
But, oh, wow.
Since January 2009, I've been getting an FTF every month. Yes. So I got that last night, and me and Jesse just confirmed we're going to Minnesota come October for they have a Halloween mega in Minnesota, right by St. Paul, Minnesota. So me and Jessica are going to go to, we're going to take a trip up to Minnesota for the weekend. We haven't gotten away in a while, so we're going to do that. So we're getting really excited about that, starting to plan that trip. So anybody going up to that Minnesota mega, look for me and Jesse. We're going to be there.
So how long of a haul is that?
How long of a what?
Haul is that?
It's about 5.5 hours.
5.5 hours. Sure.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It's St. Paul.
So 10 hours with geocaching. Okay.
We're debating. Well, see, there's not much. I mean, it's Illinois, and then there's Wisconsin, and then there's Minnesota. I've geocached a ton of Illinois. I've geocached almost as much in Wisconsin. So there's really not much. You know, it's just hot up there. Yeah. You know, I went to school go ahead, sir. Sorry.
So I was going to say, what we did at the weekend, the boys had an orienteering race. So I went over with them to a place called Baring Head, which isn't very far as the GPS points, but you've got to go round Wellington Harbour, over a hill and down a long coast road to get to it. So you don't get out there that often. I managed to grab all but one of the caches there, so some good, nice high terrain ones. Mm-hmm. Bloody windy, though. I would have posted some photos, but I couldn't stand up and hold the camera upright at one or two points. But loads of very nice area. I also found a couple of spots that you could very nicely slip another cache or two in, but I just need to work out who I need to contact to get permission and be a good girl rather than just put them in there and hope.
Right.
Then also decided on the way back, I'd try and tidy up the last few puzzle caches on the road that I hadn't got when I was out there a few months back, and bumped into a couple of suspicious characters who were a couple of caching friends who were also trying to do the same. So all I can say is they found a hell of a lot more finds than I have, and I don't know how they found one or two of them, but I'm very glad they did. No, that was good fun.
You wouldn't have found it, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I'd have got there. There's one one I didn't find, but they'd found. But I didn't fancy driving about 3-4 miles back down the road to grab that one to turn around to come back.
Oh, right.
So that'll wait for next time when I pick up the last one that's not found in the area.
Right. There you go. Yeah, good job.
It's nice. I noticed you got that Kiwi cache pronunciation there.
Could be Northern English as well. So
a little bit of a mumble. English in there. Yeah. So let's move on real quick to the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going into the geocaching podcast community. Next week's shows on GeoGearheads Randomize XLX. I am not on it. Let's start with that. It's time for another collection of smaller topics. I am not on that show at all, I promise. It's just a randomized show. I don't know who's going to be on it, but it's not me. On the GeoGearheads reboot. Not GeoGearhead, sorry. GeoSnippets Reboot Podcast, Basic Orienteering. Wife Amy and Triple H go over some basic orienteering skills that can help you with the game and from getting lost with the use of a standard compass. A standard compass. Who would have thought? And finally, becoming a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/geocachingpodcast for all the details. There are rewards for donations as little as $2.50 a month. For $5 a month, you will receive exclusive content not seen or heard in our shows. More rewards and special offers from our patrons for our patrons are coming. Really quick, let's do the mailbag. I know Andy's listening to this. Andy, we don't have a mailbag sign, do we? I don't think we do. With 3, 2, 1. All right, too late. All right, Taz, why don't you read the mailbag real quick? You got one? I thought we had a mailbag. Sorry. Right. What's up with that?
Hi, guys, thanks for reading my last note on the air. This is from Merlin1392, a.k.a. Tim. I tried to keep it short, thinking everyone knew what a 14er was. I was glad that the chat room could come up with the answer for you. I also don't travel a lot and didn't know if there was any other way. The answer to my question was to find the GPS coordinates of the particular peak. Google was my friend in finding the GPS coordinates for the peaks. Then use Google Earth with geocache option on to locate possible caches. In proximity to Fort Collins, Grace Peak is the closest and a relatively easy hike. There are also two caches on the peak, a Where I Go and a Traditional. The GC codes are GCQ8XV and GC5A3EY. my final step is to see how easy they are to find. I'm willing to bet that where I go is one of Memphis Mafia's.
You're probably right.
Got to go look that up now.
We'll finish it.
That was it.
Oh, all right. Okay. Thank you, Merlin, for that. Moving forward, and there we go. We are here. Okay, we are here with Sarah. Sarah TS, otherwise known as Info Ferret, correct?
Ferret? Yep.
Info Ferret. Hello, Sarah. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. It's a lovely day over here. It's middle of the afternoon, about 2:30. It was raining earlier. It's got sun's come back out again, but it's Wellington. It's springtime, so it's plenty. So it's windy.
Right. So you are just
beautiful day.
So to let everybody know, you are in New Zealand, correct?
Yep.
In New Zealand.
In Wellington, which is the capital of New Zealand, and about the south end of the North Island.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to think what to tell. I'll start with.
Yeah, well, why don't you tell us? Tell us
what
about
you want
to
know.
Person. Well, tell us about you as a person and as a geocacher.
Okay. You can probably tell from the accent, I'm a Brit by origin, but I've lived here since mid-2000. I grew up in a small city called Durham, which is in the northeast of England. Basically, if you drove north from London about 4.5-5 hours, you'd get there. I grew up in Durham, moved to Nottingham, which is in the Midlands, to go to university when I was 18, which is about 1.5 hours drive further south. While I was there, I met my other half. We got married. We settled down on the Nottingham-Derbyshire border. So worked around there for a few years, bought a house, had one kid. In 2000, he got offered a job in New Zealand, and we thought, well, we'll just give it a go. Move from a UK summer to a Wellington winter. Not that much difference, and see how it went for a couple of years. Well, 16 years later, we're still here. We both work in central Wellington and have two boys. One's partway through university, the other one's in intermediate school. We also share the house with an elderly cat and far more books than we need, which we can blame all of us for. Various orienteering and other outdoor gear, which is the rest of the family. The boys are heavily into playing a card game called Magic the Gathering, which I don't claim to understand in the least, but they but they certainly do. Mm-hmm. And 6 tons of knitting and sewing stuff, which is mine, and I try and keep it under control, but it doesn't always work.
Hmm.
That's so, me. How I got into...
Well, hold on. Questions.
Right.
And so you decided in 2000, so what were you in your like mid-20s, yeah. Correct, in like 2000? Not to like put your age, but
early 30s.
Like, okay, early 30s. So you're married and you have a kid and
yeah.
And your husband gets offered a job in another country. This is a whole other country, you know.
Yeah.
And so you decide, yeah, let's move to another country. Why not? Let's you know.
Yeah, how'd you do?
That's a big jump. That's a big step.
Well, we thought about it, looked around, saw whether the interests that we had in the UK we could do out here and no problems at all. There's not a language barrier.
Right, sure.
At the time, the Kiwi dollar was reasonably weak, whereas it's not now. Right. And we were lucky. Everything just worked out right. The oldest one, was 4.5 coming up to 5, so it just meant that he started school in November here. Mm-hmm. Rather than in September, as it would have been in the UK. And mm-hmm. we were lucky our house sold, so we weren't hanging on thinking, oh, my God, are we ever going to sell? That wasn't a problem.
Right.
We moved out here, rented for a few weeks, ended up buying the place we were renting, probably because we couldn't be bothered to pack up and move everything right, again. Right. Yeah. You can relate to that. You've moved cross-state.
Sure. He's moved across the country.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we stayed. And we've just stayed in Wellington for the last 16 years.
Wow. That's crazy. Yep. That takes you know, chutzpah to do that, to use the Yiddish term. I mean, that's to move to a different, whole different country. I mean, you knew nobody, I'm assuming, right? Knew nobody, and
no, didn't know anybody, and it was interesting. We're lucky that the kids just slotted in, the lad just slotted into school, and it all worked. Mm-hmm. It all worked fine.
Now, do your kids identify as being Kiwis or Brits?
Depends on who they're talking to. The the younger one's a Kiwi. He was born here. He's only got a Kiwi passport. The older one can be either. He's like the rest of us, has got dual citizenship, so mm-hmm. we can come and go, assuming we get organized and actually renew our passports.
Right. Yeah. Does he hold that over his brother's head? Like, I'm a dual citizen, you're not, kind of a thing.
Doesn't particularly bother either of them, to be honest.
I know how brothers are.
No. They're in it's school holidays at the moment, so the older one is legal age babysitter for the younger.
There you go. All right. Go ahead.
A couple of days ago, they actually, because they're fairly outdoors kids, went out and caught the bus over to another bit of the Wellington sort of area and walked over from Wainui to Catchpole Valley, which will mean nothing to you guys, but it's about 5-10 miles, camped overnight and walked back again. So the older one acted as Sherpa and carried most of the gear, and the younger one carried the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so with geocaching, how did you get into it?
Well, by default, almost. The rest of the family, even before we came out here, were being heavily into orienteering. And it's fun. I like, think of an orienteering course as a sort of, think of a power trail, and the one that gets around fastest to all the points and finds all the caches wins. That's sort of the nearest translation. Mm-hmm. I like going to the interesting areas that most people never got to, but I wasn't so much interested in the having to run around and get sweaty while I got there. When I got there, right. I've never been a runner. I'll just put that out there. Mm-hmm. But back in, I think, 2012, there's an article in Wilderness magazine, which is sort of outdoors based about New Zealand, and it had this something on this strange GPS based activity. And I just got a smartphone for my birthday about a month back. I discovered it had a GPS, so I thought I'd just give this a go. I had a look on the website. Is there anywhere around here? Yeah, okay. Well, didn't have the best starts. I picked an easy cache. Okay, I did read that bit. But I tried to find it at night in the rain, and not surprisingly, got absolutely nowhere. I walked past 2 days later and it practically waved at me. So I got the DNFs in early, okay? And I got hooked. And found that I'd lived in Wellington for over 10 years, and I thought I knew the area pretty well. Nope. I've spent the next few months, years, finding out a lot more about my city and the area. And I love the caches that talk about people and history. So I've picked up a heck of a lot from that. And I'm 4+ years on, I'm still fascinated.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive is the way that works, isn't it? How you learn so much about where you are and where you're from, you know, just from I've saw places I've never knew were, you know, never knew existed where I live, you know, so it's pretty incredible the way that works. Yeah.
And you can live an area your entire life and then discover geocaching and quite literally find out tons of new things about, you know, things within just a few square miles of your house. And it's like, holy cow,
I never knew there was that track between there and here. And
right, yeah, exactly.
Now, okay. I mean, without caching, there's no way I'd have got been up before dawn heading out to find an obscure track or being dragged out by the rest of the outdoors family on a multi-day walk carrying everything with me. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a balance between an obsession and actually sit and satisfying that and actually seeing the kids occasionally.
Sure, well, I understand that plenty. Yeah. And then yeah. InfoFerret, how'd you get InfoFerret? Where'd that come from?
Well, I was sort of looking around and I didn't particularly fancy something like Sarah 910 or. And I wanted something that was fairly gender neutral because I do. I sort of think of I do most of my caching on my own. So I just wanted something that was fairly bland. And I was partway through doing a couple of uni papers, one of which was on finding and seeking information and using information sources. So InfoSeek, information seeking, InfoSeeking, InfoFerret, and I typed it in and nobody else had been mad enough to grab it. So that's where I got it from.
That's cool.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. The younger one has decided to crawl behind so he didn't possibly appear on camera.
And yeah, then and then New Zealand, what is it like? I mean, New Zealand is beautiful, absolutely beautiful. What's it like to cache there?
Depends. I think it's pretty awesome. I've done most of my caching in New Zealand. I did a little bit went back to the UK a few months back, but not much. Mm-hmm. So I think it's got everything from park and grabs. I was saying earlier, fortunately, not too many lamppost skirt caches. You know, I'm quite happy not to have too many of those. Mm-hmm. Through to terrain 5 caches that mean what they say. And it's got everything in between. It's a lot of walking tracks. I suppose one difference is that most of our forest, what we call forest, is really sort of bushy, scrubby. It's not easy to walk through. So you follow the tracks to get where you want to be. Unless you're really insane. And especially around Wellington, there's not, out of the city, not that much is flat. So finding high terrain caches isn't too much of a problem. Okay. Around Wellington, there are there's 7 cache types within 10 kilometres, about 8 miles of my house. Plus this weekend, there's a CETO and an event cache. So you can, if you're really organized and haven't grabbed them already, you can get up to 9 mm-hmm. different cache types. And the Lower North Island's claim to fame, the 4th oldest traditional cache in the world, GC46, is within about 12 miles of me. And I grabbed that for my 1,000th a couple of years back.
Cool.
You can stroll through the CBD and pick up a couple of caches, and if you're into Pokemon, there's 500,000 of Magikarp around the waterfront, and then head up the hills for a workout. Those of you that like mountain biking, there's several excellent mountain bikes to go play, and every so often stop and find a little box hidden around the place, and you can get around much of the Greater Wellington area by bus and train. So if anybody was doing a day trip, don't bother with a hire car for a day because you can find more than enough to keep you out of mischief unless you really want to push it. Mm-hmm. Most of my caching's been in the bottom end of the North Island, mm-hmm. and I've done a bit in the South Island. Now, one thing that my son ordered me to mention to you guys is he dragged me up Mount Narrahoe a couple of years back. For those of you that are Lord of the Rings freaks, that's Mount Doom. Nice. Yes, it looks... yes, it's steep. There is a geocache near the top. And even more unfortunately, I'm going to have to head back up there again because somebody else went and placed a cache on the way up.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. So... But if the weather's right, the views are absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm, I bet.
If the weather's crap, don't bother. If the weather's grotty, go and find somewhere else. It's an high country alpine crossing area and you don't really want hypothermia.
No.
Sure.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. But I was going to say another main difference is unlike in Aussie and you guys in the US, there's not that much to beware of. We don't have snakes. We don't have bears. There is an exceedingly rare venomous spider, but the last the Katipo Bight was 1901, so I think you're pretty safe.
Pretty safe, yeah, I'd say you're pretty safe. Or you want to be the person who hasn't been bitten 107 years or 115
years. It would be a good claim. It would be a claim to fame.
Exactly. Yeah, you'd be known. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
We've got a. There's a nasty stinging nettle called Ongaronga, which, if you get caught by that, you will certainly know about it. And sandflies or midges can be a problem on the, especially on the South Island. But no, it's pretty safe, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now, I know you said you've cached in New Zealand, in the UK. You ever been in the US or anywhere else besides there?
No, I haven't. My only visit to the US was just over 24 hours in it around LAX when I was in transit to New Zealand. So
that's really wow.
I refuse to judge the rest of the continent by that.
By LAX, yeah, I would appreciate it if you would. Yeah.
So on the way, I had a UK trip earlier this year and thought about getting a cache in Dubai because there's a couple fairly near the airport, and one in Singapore because there's one actually in the airport. But unfortunately, Dubai was just too damn hot to even think about and jet lag kicked in. And Singapore, unfortunately, the flight back was delayed. So instead of having 2 hours to go cross terminals, search for cache, come back, we had 45 minutes. And I thought, I'm not going to risk that.
Mm-hmm. No.
So those will wait for another time.
And then, what's your favorite things to do while you're geocaching? What things do you like about geocaching? What do you like to do?
Well, getting to places and areas I wouldn't have got to otherwise. I say the rest of the family are out and about. It's a bit of a buzz if I can take the others to somewhere they've not managed to be yet.
Right, sure.
And enjoy it. Good views. Just exploring. I also like the mental challenge of just chipping away at a puzzle until it's solved, and then going and finally finding the thing and getting that.
Yeah, you're like my girlfriend Jessie. Yeah, she loves that too. She's all about solving those puzzles. Yeah.
I'm more about solving the puzzles than finding them. I've solved many times more than I've found.
I can give you a few around here that I've been tearing my hair out for the last few years.
And then, you know, here at the Geocaching Podcast, it's kind of we feel very strongly about certain things, whether it's pro or con. You know, we have very hard. How do you feel about, you know, what are your pros? What are your cons about when it comes to geocaching?
I'm not a huge fan of lamppost caches, but fortunately we don't have too many of them.
You don't live skirts in New Zealand? You don't have them?
You guys sound so dodgy when you say that.
So you don't live skirts?
I've done a couple, but there aren't that many. What I don't like is we've got a plant called flax, which is sort of a bit like a grassy reed. Mm-hmm. It's a great plant, but it clips, you know, so little mint tin containers in those. Sure. Not my favorite people. Sort of needle in the haystack things.
Sure.
I really like what I call intelligent challenges. The ones you've got to think about. Do challenges change the way I cache? Not really. But I like to sort of get value for money from a cache. You found it once and you've got your smiley, that's great. And then you go and find and then think, oh yeah, I can slot that into that bit of the challenge, yay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the intelligent challenges. I don't like I don't like the spell your pet's name with caches you found on a Tuesday type challenges.
So how do you feel about, do you feel that Groundspeak really dumbed down the challenge casts when they brought them back? You know, that was a big hard stance here at the Geocaching Podcast on how they dumbed it down.
I think they had to do something. Those spell your pet's names with Tuesday caches were popping up all like mushrooms all over the place. And it did need some sort of guidelines. I guess it's the thing. It's ruled out a couple of the really great caches. There's a lot of caches I'm working on off and on that if I was going to, you know, if they were placed now, they wouldn't get through.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing is that for every three BS caches, there's one really good one that also is not getting through anymore, you know, and then that's what bothers me about it.
Sorry, the lads are just messing about in the background.
Yeah. I've got to spell your name, a challenge cache that is bothering me because I have a Z in my name and they're requiring it to be an incorporated city or an incorporated town or bigger. And it's like there are zero in California. There is one in Texas. And I found a cache 5 miles away from it when I was living in Texas. And it's like, I can't find a friggin' city to go do it.
Right, sure. Absolutely.
No, it could be difficult. I found most stupid challenge cache I came across. This is my opinion. It's not, I didn't find it because I wasn't in the area for long enough. It was one in the northeast of England where they wanted you, I think it was to find 30 caches that would contained names of things that would fit the paleo diet.
Oh yeah.
So no wheat, no bread, no, you know.
Oh God.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of those type of challenge caches, and those kind of like, really?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's an exercise in creativity for thinking up the weird criteria, but they don't do it for me for finding, to be honest.
Right. It's not a real challenge per se. It's like, okay, you got to go find these caches with these names in it.
Yeah.
Right. And so what are some of your pros? Those are your cons. What are your pros?
As I said, intelligent. I like events and get to meet new people, hear what they like, what's their enthusiasm for our mutual obsession. find out what some of the older hands have been up to, where they've got to. Occasionally see if I can prize a hint from one of the ones that's been annoying me for months that I've just not been able to find know is there. And I know it is laughing at me, but I just cannot see it.
Right.
And just swapping stories and banter. A con, I guess, is this occasion. I've not been to too many, but there's the occasional event that just ends up as a bragging session or events that have just by bad luck have been held in really noisy pubs where you can't hear yourself think.
Mm-hmm.
So bars for US, for you stateside guys. Right. But no, there's very few caches I don't like. Mm-hmm. I don't like.
And how many finds do you have? Out of curiosity.
Well, I broke the 3600 at the weekend.
Nice.
All right. Congratulations.
I think that's more than 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I've only got 2/3 of that.
Quality, not quantity, isn't it?
Yeah.
And finally, why would you want to be one of the hosts? Why should we say yes? Yes, InfoFair should be the host. Why should we pick you?
Well, I feel that this is probably the section that's a bit like the bit of a beauty pageant where the contestants say,
absolutely.
I want to
absolutely.
Yes. I want to do charity work for children and animals and travel the world and meet interesting people. And no, I'm not putting a bikini on. That is not a pretty sight. But anyway, as you've probably gathered, I don't take myself too serious. Mm-hmm. Seriously, I have my share of finds, I have my share of DNFs, and I just like sharing the stories. Mm-hmm. And I like the interesting different perspectives that people bring. And you guys are pros at the game. You've been doing it for a fair few years. I'm a relative newbie. I cache almost exclusively with a smartphone. Yeah, I do have a GPS, but very, very, very rarely use it. And usually when I try and use it, it's run out of batteries. So a smartphone is it. Sometimes cache with the rest of the family. Other times I cache solo. And as I say, the point of difference being on this side of the planet, I can provide a non-US, non-Northern Hemisphere perspective on discussions. I just like having fun and sharing stories. So feel free to ask away.
All right, Tez, you got any questions for?
No, I think covered it pretty well here. One question: what's your favorite cache that you have found, and why?
Favorite cache ever? There's a couple that stick. Yeah, sorry, the lad is waving at me. The one at the top of Mount Doom is the one that probably pushed me to my limit and beyond. I had to take photographs and post photographs up there because nobody else would quite frankly believe I'd been there. best ever event cache I went to was just before New Year this year, was held at a dock at a hut, Trampas Hut, up Mount Taranaki near New Plymouth. And there was only two of us plus the event organizer that was there. And so you met at 8 o'clock or so at the car park, walked for about 3 hours up to get to the mountain track, up the mountain, up steps and along tracks, and got to the hut for 11, which was where the event was held. And you had amazing views and lots of high terrain caches, including a couple of bits, at least one spot on the DT grid I hadn't yet finished. That'll get finished sometime. I've got about 8 left.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
They'll come.
There you go.
Yeah, they'll come. So amazing day walking around, chatting to the other two that were mad enough to come up with me. Walking back down, got back off the mountain at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and my legs ached for about 3 days afterwards. I was a wreck. but that'd be the best ever event. Mm-hmm. And to say, I like intelligent caches that need planning. There's a best ever challenge cache, I think, would have to be the Compass Crossover Challenge. And I can't remember its GC code, sorry. It's based in Wellington. But as I said, New Zealand has two islands, but they're not, the North Island isn't directly north of the South Island. They're shifted over slightly. So you had to qualify for this cache. You had to find four other caches. One in the South Island that was further north than a case you'd found in the North Island, and one in the North Island that was further west than you'd found one in the South Island. And they all had to be found within a month of each other. So that needed quite a bit of jiggling and planning to make sure that I could actually get those four. And I managed it just because I took my parents to see a concert in New Plymouth, which was just west enough to balance one in the South Island. And it was just the challenge of, can I actually do this and can I make it work, that made that made that one for me.
And then where you live, is it like, obviously not New Zealand, but obviously I can't do the whole country, but like where you live, yeah. is it an abundance of caches? Are they far away from each other? You know, is it pockets of a bunch? How does it work there?
We've got tons of caches around Wellington. There's, okay. Oh, this is something I should have prepped earlier. Sorry.
That's all right.
It's one, there's a good couple of hundred around Wellington.
That's good.
Okay. As I said, ranging from the 1-1s, the container stuck with a magnet in a bus shelter or under a seat, through to hidden behind a tree under a rock, ones on the trails, way up onto the ridgeline or the skyline walk. There's a nice, well, it's not really a power trail because it's a good solid day's walk to get these sort of 25 or so caches. And they start at they go all along the ridge line that's behind the house. Well, across the other side of my suburb and behind the house, and you can walk along those. I've been slowly picking those off a couple at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to pick your day when you go up there. It's not too. It's a wee bit windy for it today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but around town and up the around the Hutt Valley, because that's another sort of sub area of Wellington City that it has loads and loads of caches, and that's where I tend to head to if I want to drive by, rather than go out for a forest walk.
Right. Is there a lot of caches out there? Like, you see a lot. If you go to an event, is there a good 20, 30 people, or is it, you know?
Yeah, most events, there's about that many. There's actually two events on Saturday. No, not Saturday, Sunday, sorry, Sunday. There's one that's tidying up one of my, there's a Seto and the Pahatanui Inlet that's about 15 kilometers, 10 miles north of us. And that's one of my all-time favorite places to go to. It's a little, it's a sort of, not quite a lagoon because it's open to the sea, but beautiful area. But once a year, there's somebody organises a Seto there, and there's about 15 or so people have said they're coming to that. And there's an event cache in the evening that's going to be. There's not that many have said yes yet, but I'd probably expect 20, 25, possibly 30 people. That said, I did organise, for the 29th of February, I organised an event in central Wellington at lunchtime just to make sure I got something to fill in that dot day.
That's the way to do it, man. When there's not nothing there, you do it yourself. Sure.
Yeah. So that was a turn up at this sort of little bit of a town square. And I think we got about 70 people on that on a lunch hour.
Oh, wow.
Because everybody and so Wellington's a small town. It's a government. There's a lot of government off departments, and so but a lot of people sort of could bail out to their office for 15, 20 minutes, come in, say hi, sign the log
and go. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Wow. Nice. And Taz, anything else?
So are you running out of caches, local caches to find with having 3,600 finds?
I'm sort of running out of drive-bys to find. There's plenty if I'm prepared to. There's plenty if I want to walk.
Okay.
There's Wellington, because Wellington's on the south coast. We've sort of only got 180 degrees of the circle to find caches in.
Mm-hmm.
If I want caches pretty much south of me, it would have to be jump on the ferry or fly over to the South Island, which isn't really doable for it's doable for a day trip just, but you'd really want a weekend or longer to. And there are truckloads of caches around Nelson Richmond Way. If you know, that's sort of hog heaven.
Right. or so how long would it be like a drive up to Auckland?
Up to Auckland, I'd say about 10 hours.
10 hours. Okay.
Yeah, I'm being nodded, but I'd say it's, for me, it's about Taupo, which is a city and a lake in the middle of, in the middle of the North Island.
Mm-hmm.
That's driving time. That's not caching time. So add as much more as you want for that.
Oh, sure.
And again, about the same up to Auckland. I've been to orienteering events with the rest of the family, and that's finished at about, being in Auckland, finished about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we've got back home about 10, about 11, half 11 at night. But that's sort of stopping only to go to the loo and change drivers and just keeping going. Yeah. You don't want to do that if you don't have to. If you want to, if you want to get up to Auckland quickly, it's about an hour's flight.
Okay. There you go. All right, anything else, Taz?
Nope, not for me.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really, really, really appreciate it. You've been wonderful. It's always interesting to hear from somebody from New Zealand. And Taz, you want to do the closing stuff, please, Taz?
Thank you. It's been great being here.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, it was a pleasure. A pleasure to talk to somebody from, I mean, it's, look, I can see the window outside. It's daytime behind you. It's daytime. It's nighttime. It's tomorrow, isn't it? Aren't it tomorrow?
It is. Yeah, we've got the dateline in between us. It's about 17, we're about 17 hours ahead of you at the moment. Oh, my
goodness. It's tomorrow.
Yeah.
So look, the sun will come up tomorrow, Taz. Good news.
All right. Awesome.
All right, Taz, you want to close us out? Thank you. Do it.
Sure.
Hit it.
So thank you for subscribing to Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us and each and every Wednesday at 9:30 Eastern for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the GCPC. The website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and on many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us on our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat Productions and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, and Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.